Welcome to the MMA podcast number 198. It is March 1st here on a Wednesday. We're doing it guerrilla style, the usual studio setup we've had a little bit of technical difficulties with. So we're doing it on the laptop. So no music this week, no sound clips this week, although we hope we can get back to it next week. We took a couple of weeks off, A, because of the technical difficulties, and B, because there really wasn't much going on in the world of MMA aside from a Fedor fight that got canceled at the last minute. So there, we figured that might be a good chance to take a little winter break before we get into this spring, which it's looking like every week we are going to have more and more to talk about. We got this new GSP news to talk about, but before we get any further into it, I got to introduce the other man on the line, a voice you've become very familiar with if you listen to the podcast. It's good old Patty Johnson from Southern Cali. Pat, what's going on, dude?
Oh, we're just hanging, Big Jake. Just
living the dream out here. Looking forward to chopping up some MMA game with you. Been too long. The MMA podcast, episode 198. And got some big news. Getting a breakdown of UFC 209. Yeah, nice. Very excited. We got a lot to go over.
Yeah, I'm excited to break stuff down. Especially, I mean, first let's not waste any time. George St. Pierre is officially coming back. You know, it's been over 3 years since his last fight at UFC 167 back in November 2013, where he won that controversial split decision against Johnny Hendricks. He has been out for 3 years, always kind of tempting the, you know, saying he may not come back. Just a few months ago, we started hearing more and more news that he would come back. But the, you know, he and the UFC couldn't agree to terms as far as what to pay him. It looks they have come to terms, and it looks like they have picked out an opponent and a new weight class for George St. Pierre, the longtime welterweight 170-pound champion, is now going to be fighting up at middleweight, and he's getting the title shot right off the bat. Yoel Romero, who was scheduled to get the shot, who has yet to make any comments except for wishing George good luck. Yoel is now on the back burner. George St. Pierre, argued by many as the greatest fighter of all time, is officially coming back. A date has not been set yet, although Dana White has said it's in Las Vegas. And if I were to bet on it, I say this is going to be at UFC 213, July 8th, in International Fight Week. That makes the most sense. They will be looking to put a big fight on that card. It's in Vegas. It's about 4 months away. The timetable's perfect. So you could probably expect them to announce that it will be on that July 4th card or July 8th to be specific. International Fight Week in Las Vegas, UFC 213. Although that's not official at all. You can pretty much take it to the bank. But Michael Bisping versus GSP. Pat, what was your first reaction when you heard that, A, it's official, GSP is going to be making his return, and we'll be getting a title shot right off the bat against the Count?
Well, for myself, Jake, there was really not a whole lot of surprise. The Michael Bisping GSP rumor had kind of been circulating around. There had been a lot of buzz on the Twitter sphere that was a fight that was going to happen and that GSP was looking to come back and that he was going to do it at 185 pounds. So to hear it finally made official, not too surprising. I mean, this is the UFC, you know, now run by an entertainment group, and GSP, he's one of the best mixed martial artists to ever compete. His record is a standard by which, for myself, greatness is judged. His only two losses, he came back and defended and looked dominant in getting those victories back. And was one of the best fighters of all time, a master of exploiting his opponent's weaknesses. If you were a wrestler, he was going to outstrike you and, you know, keep the game standing up. If you were a striker, he was just going to out-wrestle you and use his ground game to beat you. He was so good at exploiting deficiencies. And it's great to see him back. I'm very excited. It's just so interesting. You know, nowadays, he's fighting Michael Bisping, who a couple years ago we might have thought, you know, GSP would have just mopped the floor with him handily. But, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this, Jake, and I say, Bisping is now the UFC's 185-pound champion. He beat Anderson Silva. He TKO'd Luke Rockhold in the first or second round. I want to say second round. And to gain the championship, pardon me, and kind of in GSP form, you know, Bisping had been submitted by Luke Rockhold, and then he came back and knocked him out. So he had that redemption there, and now he's the champion. He redeemed himself again, beating Dan Henderson, who was another loss that was, I mean, that's a highlight reel that's never going to end, but at least he got that victory in the end. And so he's got all this momentum now, and he's fighting a GSP that hasn't been in the game for over 3 years now. And, you know, let's see what he looks like when the time comes to fight. Now, he's not going to be cutting down to 170 pounds, so who knows what he'll actually be looking like and when he gets into the cage. I don't know that we've ever seen GSP fight at 185 pounds. If we have, I don't recall the last time that was, but be that as it may, I could see Bisping taking this fight. Bisping is a very similar fighter, if you will. Bisping has a good ground game. He's always, and especially, you know, we always say the non-American mixed martial artists really have a ground deficiency, or at least a wrestling deficiency. That's the perception. And Michael Bisping has always been ahead of the curve in that respect. You know, fought Rashad Evans to the draw way back when he was first starting out. He's always actually been one of the better mixed martial artists in the game, in my opinion anyhow, and he's got a good striking game to go with it. He's thrown some crafty techniques as well, and he seems to be getting better himself as time goes on. I would not be surprised if Bisping won. Bisping is also a little bit bigger of a guy than GSP, so he should enjoy a little bit of height and reach in there as well. It's oh man, I don't know. It's going to be a very excellent fight. Wasn't too surprised to hear the announcement, but man, this is certainly a money in the bank fight for the UFC.
Yeah, and man, as much respect as I'd like to give Mike. You know, he is the best English fighter of all time. He belongs to a group that not many fighters belong to, which is that old school crop of middleweight / light heavyweight fighters who all fought one another and helped get the sport huge back when it was growing. Like Dan Henderson, Michael Bisping, Vanderlei Silva, Vitor Belfort. Who else? You know, just this crop of guys who really, if it wasn't for them, I don't know if the sport would be as big as it is now. I think he has the most wins ever in the history of the UFC, and is tied for the most fights with Tito and Frank Mir. You know, the guy has had an incredible career. That said. He got knocked out by Anderson Silva. Let's be real. That was the most bizarre stoppage, non-stoppage I've ever seen in my life. And I think Silva kind of, in celebrating the win, kind of took himself out of the fight. Then when it got restarted, it was all Michael Bisping. I almost want to call that fight a no contest, because that was just one of the weirdest things I've ever seen happen in a fight. The next fight, Luke Rockhold, KO. Look, Luke underestimated the shit out of Michael Bisping, but I just, man, I just still have this feeling that Luke Rockhold, Chris Weidman, Jacare, and Yoel, all four of those guys, I think, beat him at least 8 times out of 10. And I know that's going to drive a lot of people crazy that I'm not giving him the respect he deserves, but I thought that was kind of a case where Luke lost the fight in underestimating Bisping, and if there ever is a trilogy made, I think Luke will deservedly be a big favorite and probably win the fight. His most recent win against, what, a 46-year-old Dan Henderson? Like, come on. Like, I think Dan's, like, what, 13th as far as the rankings go in the middleweight class? Like, yeah, it's cool that they made that fight and it was his last hurrah and now he's off, like, barbecuing and like, doing shit in the Submission Underground against John Jones. I don't know what the fuck he's doing, but I don't think Michael Bisping has a chance to beat George St. Pierre. That's the overall point I'm getting to here. George is, in my opinion, at this point, I think John Jones will eventually overtake him if he gets his shit straight. It's between Fedor, Silva, Jones, Mighty Mouse, and GSP when it comes to best fighter ever. Sorry, Anderson, I take points off for the steroids. Sorry, Mighty Mouse, I take points off for strength of opponent. Sorry, Fedor, I take points off for you losing like 4 fights at the end there. And Jones, like I said, will probably pass him eventually, but he has yet to do enough in my eyes to, you know, match up to what GSP did, which was dominate a very good welterweight division for years and years. And like you said, GSP fights weren't really usually close. They were usually one-sided beatdowns, and the 2 fights he lost, he came back and avenged. So that's a pretty high standard. George, he seems like the last guy to come back unprepared and not ready to fight. I think he comes back just as fierce as we saw him in his prime. It's not like he's old. The dude is, what, 30, what? I don't want to guess. I'm going to pull it up here on Google. 35? I mean, that's relatively young, especially considering he hasn't fought since he was 32. I think.
Yeah, and you're fighting at 185 pounds as well. You're not fighting a flyweight here.
Yeah, and Michael Bisping, I think, is 37. I think Bisping is actually going to be the older fighter here. But yeah, I think their one line has opened up on Bovada. GSP is -130, and Bisping has even odds. So I expect that line to trend toward GSP pretty heavily as fight time gets nearer and nearer. And apparently there will be a press conference. If you want to hear more about this, there's going to be a press conference right before the UFC 209 weigh-ins. The presser will take place Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. The Bisping GSP presser. I would love to be in Vegas for that one. Anything else on that? I feel like there's a lot to talk about, but man, we've got probably a while until it goes down.
Yeah, you know what? It's just gonna be interesting to see. I mean, I think you're pretty much spot on with as far as when that's got to be an international fight week card. That's got to be their crown jewel. I'm sure they're going to be piecing together a big card around this one. I mean, the return of GSP, they're probably going to want to do it at the new arena, the T-Mobile Arena, I believe it is, out there in Vegas. So I'd have to think, again, we're just speculating. Jake, you're the one postulating here. I'd happen to agree. Completely unfounded rumors, but I would not be surprised if it went down something like that. And No, good fight, man. It'll be interesting to see how they stack around it.
Imagine if they can get Conor back to fight the winner of Ferguson versus Khabib. And we got GSP and Conor McGregor on the same card. That would be fun.
You know they're going to try and work it.
Hey, they'll. I think Ronda recently tweeted something like ships are safe in the harbor, but ships were meant for war or something. It basically hinted at a return. Which honestly, look, I think she may have taken Holm and Nunes a little lightly. I really hope she changes camps because I think the current camp she's with is not good for her career, to put it lightly. I would love nothing more than to see Ronda Rousey come back and win the belt, because that would be a hell of a story. Look, they're not going to give her another title shot when she comes back. She'll have to prove herself maybe two or three times, and I think that will probably overall be good for her to, you know, not be thrown back to the wolves against the best fighter currently at your weight class, but to maybe fight someone who stylistically, you know, Rousey's going to kill and get a little bit of pride back going for her. And shit, if they could bring Rousey back too, I doubt that they would get her back for a July return, but I would like to see her fight again in 2017, because, you know, as much as you hear fans say she sucks, blah, 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 look, she's still a badass. And right now, if you don't think she's one of the top five women's bantamweight fighters in the world, then you're a fucking clown and you don't know what you're talking about. But, yeah, let's, what the fuck else is going on this week? We did miss a little bit. We missed the Fedor news, which honestly I felt bad going like all the way leading up to that fight, you know, because I'm like, damn, Fedor is about to fight Mitrione, and because my studio is on the fritz, we're not going to be able to break this fight down and talk about it on the podcast. Then the evening of, I think just hours before Bellator was supposed to start, the prelims were supposed to kick off, Mitrione backs out due to kidney stones, which, I mean, if you give any crap to Mitrione for not being able to fight, jump off a bridge, because that is one of the worst things you can go through. It sucks for all parties involved, especially Fedor, especially Matt, who said I think he had like 20 kidney stones the night of, and like wanted to fight, but the doctors wouldn't let him. And coincidentally, him himself was a part, I think at UFC, it was one of the ones I went to, maybe UFC 175, if I'm not mistaken, he was supposed to fight Stefan Struve, and Stefan Struve like passed out or something before the fight and couldn't fight, and the fight ended up being canceled the night of. But yeah, this being the second fight that has happened to Meathead, it was a damn shame. I was really looking forward to that fight, and I'm assuming they're going to postpone it to a later date. Have you heard anything about the Fedor fight, or if it's going to get moved or what?
You know, I personally have not heard any follow-up to that, but, man, I was looking forward to that as well, especially because I was giving Mitrione some pretty good odds in that fight, really. I mean, Mitrione has a good size and reach, and his striking acumen has really come a long way. Certainly, he doesn't want to roll with Fedor or anything like that. I don't think he wants it to go that way, but... As far as just the striking and athleticism, I mean, there were certainly some factors in Mitrione's favor going into that fight, especially, you know, Fedor has not looked so hot in his last performance. So, I mean, I don't know. And I'm a huge Fedor mark. You know, anybody,
Anybody who knows the old boy P will tell you I am a staunch defender of Fedor and all of his accomplishments. One of the greatest of all time for sure. But yeah, I don't know. This I certainly feel like Mitrione had a real good chance in this one. I want to say it sounded like all the intentions were that they were going to reschedule this one, but have not heard anything further as far as a date.
I'm not sure there, but what else is going on? Damian Maia versus Jorge Masvidal set for UFC 211 in Dallas. That will be a fun fight. Props to Damian fucking Maia, who by all means probably could have stood on the sidelines and waited for the winner of Woodley and Wonderboy. Staying active, taking on a dangerous welterweight in Jorge Masvidal. I don't know. Let's see if a line has anything been set for this. No, I don't see any betting lines for this one. But you got to assume the grappling with Damian Maia, who's been on an absolute tear, is going to be a favorite over Jorge Masvidal. But man, he may have bitten off more. And look, I think Maia will win, but Jorge Masvidal is a big test. He just made mincemeat out of Donald Cerrone. UFC 211, that's stacked now. You got the heavyweight championship, that women's strawweight title, which we will get to in a second, Rothwell versus Verdum, a lot of fun fights.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a good one there. And really, I mean, yeah, you got to give credit to Damian Maia. He, by all means, probably should have been in there for a UFC title fight some time ago at the 170-pound division. His only losses, I mean, Jake Shields, that was a split decision. Could have gone his way in that fight. The Rory McDonald fight, he absolutely dominated Rory McDonald in the first round. And then just seemingly kind of gassed out, just completely was done, and then just had nothing left for rounds two and three. But ever since then, just as you mentioned, just absolutely dominating everybody. He's won six in a row right now. Submitted Carlos Condit in the first round like nobody's business. Submitted Matt Brown. Just dominating everybody that the UFC has put in front of him as of late. So and he's really putting it on the line, taking on Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. I mean, he's always a gamer at 155 or 170 pounds, and he's been tearing him up himself. The Cerrone versus Masvidal fight, oh man, that certainly was one that could have gone either way, but really Masvidal, just a little more durable. You know, he seems to, I mean, he can take one, and he gets into those brawls. And he really is. He's a tough dude. I don't know, man. It's one of those though that I don't know if he will be able to withstand the grappling acumen of Damian Maia. I mean, if he can pull a Rory McDonald and get out of that first round, you know, make a good showing of it, keep the distance. Because I mean, Gamebred, he's still a younger fighter himself. I mean, he's been around the game for a long time himself, but he just continues to keep looking better. If he can keep that distance, obviously, and just keep Maia off of him, he's got a really good chance at this one. My goodness, yeah, I don't even know who to pick right now, but that's going to be a great scrap.
I'm pretty sure I'm leaning toward the favorite in Maia, but we shall see what happens there. What else is going on? UFC 212... We have what looks like a title eliminator match between Claudia Gadelha and Carolina Kowalkiewicz, which is kind of a head-scratcher, because the UFC, at least under past ownership and past matchmaking strategies, when there's a dominant champion like a Demetrius Johnson, or like currently in the women's strawweight division, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you avoid making the same title matches over and over and over. Because once you hit 0-3, you're kind of dead at that weight class. Once you've lost three fights in a row to the current champion, barring some freak in, you know, controversy or finish or what have you, once you go 0-3, you're basically done. And obviously you don't want to see fights made over and over that are one-sided. You have Yoni and Jacek's two most recent opponents in Claudia Gadelha and Carolina Kowalkiewicz. And it's hard to make an argument for anyone else to get the next title fight other than the winner of this fight, because this is literally number one and number two at that weight class, which I do think you could make a special exception for Claudia, because both times she has fought Joanna, it's been a super close fight. I think both fights were 3-2, if I'm not mistaken. I think the first fight was a non-title fight, but it was like the main event. No. The first fight was a 3-rounder that was a split, and the second fight was a 5-rounder that went 3-2 Joanna. So I guess you could make an exception for Claudia, who I think will probably win this fight. But I sort of expected them to do what they usually do with title fighters who are real high up the rankings but have just recently gotten a title fight, which is feed them two or three bums before you throw them back into the mix of, you know, fighting for a title shot. So kind of a difference from what they have normally done strategically as far as title contenders go.
Yeah, truly. But I guess this is just one of those situations, like as you mentioned with Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, when you are the champion in your weight class and the number one and number two fighters in your weight class, you've already beaten two, maybe three times already.
Look at a certain point. And Avidez, like after he got KO'd, he just got fed can after can after can after can, because you know once he loses to Johnson for the third time, he'll probably have to go back up to 35, because it's hard to, you know, justify staying at a weight class where the guy has beaten you every single time.
Exactly. And that also creates a scenario. So now you have your, let's say, your number five fighter or your number seven fighter, perhaps, getting a title shot when they might not have before, just because if you keep having that five or six fight the one or two fighter before they get a chance to get a shot at the champion, well, what if the number one or number two takes them out? Then all of a sudden you don't have a contender anymore, because then you just have the same person who the champion has been beating over and over again. So I think we may be seeing a little bit of that, but with this particular matchup, in particular with Kowalkiewicz versus Gadelha, I think if Kowalkiewicz wins, she has a better case for a title shot, at least more immediately, just because she is fairly fresh off of fighting the champion. And although I want to say, to my recollection, Yan Jacek won that. I want to say I had her winning that 4-1 or maybe 3-2. Kowalkiewicz did hurt her pretty bad. I want to say, I forget if it was the 4th round. She certainly hurt Yan Jacek more in that fight than Yan Jacek hurt her, even though through the accumulation of the points game and everything, just being on point for the majority of that fight, she did, in my estimation, fairly deservingly win a unanimous decision. There is that little bit of, well, you know what, though? She got close. She almost had the finish. She had the champ hurt. Can she come back and make those adjustments versus Claudia Gadelha? Even if she were to beat Kowalkiewicz, she still may need to win a couple more, just because she's already had two shots. The first one, you know, she got dropped she almost got knocked out herself at the beginning of the first round, and then it seemingly looked like she came back and won the other two rounds. She certainly had a lot of pressure. I haven't watched that fight again in some time, but anyways, that was a very close fight. Could have easily been given to Gadea, but it was given to Ian Jajic. In the five-round rematch, it was not as controversial. Ian Jajic won that fairly squarely, 3-2. And there wasn't really any of those big moments of, you know, any, at least to my recollection, where, oh, you know, this fighter's really hurt or that or the other. It was good, solid action, but I think just because, you know, she's already dropped the ball twice, it was close, but it wasn't like, oh man, you know, if it wasn't like the Kovalkovitz fight where there was that one specific point where you're like, oh, if she could just do this or that, you know, it was pretty much just an all around beatdown. As far as the Ian Jajic Gadea rematch went, but yeah, interesting matchmaking. I think if Kovalkovitz wins, she's got a good shot for the next title fight. As for Gadea, probably going to have to get at least one more after this one before she gets it, because you got to think they're going to want to throw Michelle Waterston in after Ian Jajic and Andrade, you know, depending on how that fight goes down. You got to think the Karate Hottie will be in there soon if she keeps her momentum up.
Certainly, yeah. And speaking of strawweight, I don't think we talked about this. I think this happened when we were off the air. Officially, the fight has been made between Jessica Andrade, who recently looked good in a winning performance. She will be taking on the champ, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I believe that will be at UFC 211, the same fight we see, or the same card where we see Stipe Miocic take on Junior Dos Santos. That should be fun. I mean, you know, I'm obviously going to pick the champ here, but Jessica Andrade, I think, makes the most sense. It's a fresh face. We haven't seen her fight the champ before. She's on a tear and has looked good, gotten finishes. Makes the most sense of anyone else out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's 3-0 since coming down to 115 pounds. Used to fight at 135 pounds. I mean, Andrade is a very, very large 115-pounder. And she's got a good skill set. You know, she's got some solid striking, and she's got a good grappling game. Man, it's just, is she going to be able to deal with the world-class Muay Thai and the takedown defense? I mean, Joanna's ground game, it really doesn't get talked about at all, but, you know, that's kind of how she's winning, because nobody's taking her down. She's able to employ her game on the ground for the most part. You know, she's making adjustments, and she's just solid all the way around. So it's can she navigate Joanna's takedown defense? Can she get her to the ground? Because I want to say Joanna is definitely going to enjoy some height and reach there. And certainly, although Andrade has some good striking and she's a powerful striker too, Jajic, I mean, I just don't think that's the ideal route. You don't want to stand and trade. I mean, I probably got a foot of height on Joanna. Well, not a foot, but I've got a good amount of height on Joanna. I don't want to stand and trade with her. Not that I want to stand and trade with women anyways. This is going a bad direction. But I'm just saying, she is not to be not to be messed with on the feed. Man, it's going to be a tough one. But yeah, Andrade, she's certainly just, again, as we were talking about, just the way the division is shaking out, seems like a great choice for next shot at the title at 115 pounds. Definitely a solid move, I think.
For sure. Any other news? I saw Dana White actually going to be bringing Misha Sirkunov back to the UFC, which was, of recent releases, one of the biggest question marks, as he was looking good at 205 before the UFC cut him. Dana White saying on TSN today, quote, "We got a deal done." So nice to see that Misha will not in fact, be leaving the UFC. Anything else, though? I was scanning all of the news we missed since we were gone. I think we covered most of it. We talked about the disappointment of that Fedor fight not going down, which man, of all of the joke cards that Bellator's made, this actually was a pretty legit fight. But I hope we see that remade. I'm hearing rumors that big news on Cyborg. USADA basically rescinded the ban. So all of that news about Cyborg popping hot recently, we had some steaming hot takes on it. Apparently she's innocent now or something. And honestly, I don't know. I don't know if like in actuality she is. I mean, we all can agree that she for sure juiced at one point of her career. But, I mean, as long as she isn't juicing now, I don't have a problem with it. And USADA is pretty stringent with those bans. So either she had a really good defense and is bullshitting everyone, or she really was not breaking any rules, which either way, I don't know what that does to your women's featherweight picture now, because you have the champ, Germaine de Randamie, who it was assumed with Cyborg still on the rack, maybe you would make a rematch against Holm, especially because it seems like those seem like the only 145-pound women's fighters the UFC has on their roster currently. I haven't heard any rumors about them signing anyone from Invicta or anyone at 35 who wants to move up to 45. So yeah, with Cyborg now, good. I don't know if we will see her versus Germaine de Randamie happen quicker. I know she said something about an injury after beating Holm, but, I'm not sure exactly what the timetable would be on that. Yeah, I think we only have one more topic left if you don't have anything else, which is breaking down UFC 209. We're making good time as far as keeping it a little under an hour here. I think we're 37 minutes in. But yeah, UFC 209 this Saturday at the T-Mobile Arena in Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada. Any thoughts on the prelims before we go anywhere? Not really the most impressive set of prelims I've ever seen. Some familiar names. Mirsad Bektik taking on Darren Elkins. Some unfamiliar names like Andre Sukhamthath and Daniel Spitz and Luke Sanders. Maybe all of those fighters after UFC 209 can earn themselves a Wikipedia, because none of them currently have one. I'll probably try and catch the last three fights of the prelims, see Yuri Alcantara, Mirsad Bektik, and Marcin Tybura, because those are all names that I am familiar with. But aside from that, let me check the odds here and see if there are Bektik, like expected, is a huge favorite. He's minus 800. That's the most one-sided match on the card. Marcin Tybura, minus 160. Yuri Alcantara, actually pretty even odds with Luke Sanders. And it looks like all of the prelim fights I haven't gone through also have pretty even odds. So if you don't have anything better to do, I would actually catch the prelims. Because usually when the odds are close for all the prelims, that works out for some close fights and some bangers. So if I have nothing better to do, I might try and catch those Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 prelims before the pay-per-view kicks off at 10 Eastern. You got any thoughts on the prelims, Pat?
Oh, I'm right there with you. See, I think... Also, what bodes well is just about every fight on the prelims. You have someone fighting someone with a Wikipedia page fighting someone without a Wikipedia page. And that just makes me think, we got some people being set up for the fall here. We got some people being set up for some good finishes, some good performances. Surprise, Luke Sanders, though. Yeah, versus Yuri Alcantara. That should be a good fight. But really, that just makes me think it should be action-packed with either finishes or close fights, with the Vegas odds being what they are. But, yeah, some decent names on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary portion of the card. Some good matchups there. And, hey, you know, hopefully the preliminary card on the UFC Fight Pass portion, we can at least get some good finishes in there.
And that brings us to the main card. I completely forgot that this fight was on UFC 209, but I am very, very much looking forward to seeing Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt 2. They fought 8 years ago back in Pride, where Overeem got the sub. They will be fighting. They've both come a long way since and are fighting again this Saturday. Who do you got in this one? Who do you have in this one? Pardon my improper English.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, when did we start using grammar or proper English? That's a thousand pardons, good sir. You know, for me, it may be wishful thinking, but, man, I'm going with Hunt. I don't care. I'm going with Hunt. I don't think... you know, Hunt really shored up his ground game as of late, and I don't think this fight's going that way. I think the Super Samoan's going to come in there, and I think he's going to put some hands on Overeem. I mean, for the love of God, Overeem has been knocked out by lesser fighters in the past years. Alistair does seem to have righted his course as of late, for sure. He's been going in a better direction, but man, Mark Hunt, that's my guy. I gotta pick him to take him out. I mean, I got Mark Hunt all day in this one.
Mark Hunt, a slight dog in Vegas, plus 125. The Overeem's minus 145. I'm taking Reem. I think Hunt, you know, as likable as the guy might be, he's trash against anyone who can really just tie him up and especially bring him to the ground. I'm taking Alistair Overeem by, once Hunt starts to get tired, either in the second or third round, I got Overeem by guillotine choke. Next fight, we got Groovy Lando Venata, the best fighter in the UFC that you know nothing about. He's taking on David Tamer, a guy without a Wikipedia page, and according to Vegas, without a chance. He's a big underdog, plus 300 to Lando's minus 360. I got Lando all day in this one, who put up a impressive performance against Tony Ferguson before getting subbed out, and then against John McDessie, the bull, tough fighter, at UFC 206. Lando won a minute 40 in with a beautiful wheel kick knockout. That rocked him to sleep. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Lando fight again. I expect another finish. And we will see how long it takes before it takes to get Lando up in the lightweight rankings, where I think he should be. Are you thinking the same year, or are you going for the dude without a Wikipedia page?
He rocked him to sleep like a baby with his baba. No, that was very impressive. I mean, Lando Venata, like you mentioned, coming in against Tony Ferguson and putting on a hell of a fight. It certainly didn't look like a bum. He was going toe-to-toe, and he put some things on Tony Ferguson more than once in that fight, too. That was a fantastic showing in spite of his defeat in that one. And, yeah, coming back for his sophomore effort in the UFC, knocking out John McDessie like he was a bum with a fucking wheel kick. Nobody does that to John McDessie. Fantastic showing. Yeah, you got to go with the groovy one in this one, man. It'll be interesting to see how he comes out. Certainly seems to be an interesting character. Let's see how he does against old David Tamer.
Next fight up, we got the vet Rashad Evans taking on Dan Kelly. Rashad took a couple years off, then lost back-to-back fights against Ryan Bader and Glover Teixeira. Taking on the Aussie Dan Kelly, who was on a 3-fight winning streak, just beating Shoeface and Chris Camozzi. He since losing to Sam Alvey back in 2015. Man, as much as I'm getting hate here and hate for Evans, I think Vegas properly has him around where he should be at -235. Those losses were both pretty one sided, but they did come to two incredibly talented 205ers in Ryan Bader and Glover Teixeira. This is Rashad Evans' debut at middleweight. So if he can make some waves, it'll be interesting to see how high up the rankings the former 205 champion can climb. But he is 37, starting to get up there a little bit. But, I'm interested to seeing Rashad Evans at middleweight. I have him winning this fight. There are a lot of intriguing matchups that you can make for Sugar at 185.
Yeah, you certainly can. I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see how his debut goes at 185. I mean, here he is a decade into his career, and he's going to be making his middleweight debut. You know, came onto the scene in The Ultimate Fighter 2, fighting at heavyweight. Had, I want to say, his first fight in the UFC at heavyweight. So interesting. This is like BJ Penn fighting at 145, 8 years after he should have been. I don't know if it'll be enough to get Rashad back on the right track. I mean, maybe this will be a winnable fight for him. I mean, Dan Kelly at 12-1, you know, no small feat. I mean, he's got some solid wins. He's 5-1 in the UFC, former Olympian for Australia in judo, so certainly no slouch. I don't know. I'm surprised he's that big of a favorite. Or I'm surprised that Rashad Evans is that big of a favorite against Dan Kelly. Just the fact he hasn't won in a while, and it's been years since his last victory versus Dan Kelly, who's a younger he's certainly got less road mileage in MMA than Rashad Evans does, and he's got the momentum on his side. So I don't know. It's going to be a close one, certainly a winnable one for Rashad Evans. But I don't know. With his last couple performances, granted, those were certainly top tier opponents, but they weren't the best showing. So I'll probably be picking him in this fight, but not with the most confidence.
I kind of rule off the last two losses just because Bader and Glover are so good, but that really could be a sign of him starting to get older and his skills really starting to fall off. This brings us to the main and co-main event of UFC 209, which arguably up until the Bisping GSP fight was made, because anything with GSP in it is for sure going to be a giant draw. But I want to say, up until this Bisping GSP fight, these are the two most anticipated fights right now in the UFC. I don't think Stipe's fight matches up to either one of these. Garbrandt versus Dillashaw is going to be good, but as far as what the fights people are talking about are, you know, in forums and with friends, These are the two. Because the fight, again, I mean, A, you have one of the most talked about guys in Khabib Nurmagomedov fighting a guy in Tony Ferguson who is on fire, and the winner will probably fight the biggest name in the sport, Conor McGregor. And welterweight, you've got a crazy close matchup. They went a few months back and drew. Welterweight is maybe your most stacked. If not, I mean, you have got to say it's at least one of the top three stacked divisions in the sport. There are so many names in that welterweight division. And the fact that we're getting this fight twice is huge. So these are two giant fights, and honestly, I cannot wait for Saturday night to come. It can't get here any quicker. Shit, I guess we'll start with the co-main, Tony Ferguson +155, a underdog to the dominant Russian, the undefeated Russian, Khabib Nurmagomedov, 24-0. He got a little rocked by Michael Johnson early on, but went on to sub him out and honestly just beat the living shit out of him for 2.5 rounds. Every fight he goes into, you know, and that's including against killers like former champion Rafael Dos Anjos, tough guy Pat Healy, Abel Trujillo, Thiago Tavares. He goes through everyone like a fucking buzzsaw, because he has some of the most just dominant, controlling wrestling in the entire sport. Very difficult to stop. And you're taking on a guy who I don't want to say Khabib's game is orthodox and normal, but compared to Tony Ferguson, Ferguson has a funky fight style and is probably going to be the best fighter that Nurmagomedov has ever fought to fight off of his back, which that's going to, you know, pose a whole new set of problems. Ferguson can, you know, sub out some of the best fighters with ease. I mean, both of these dudes have so much talent. I could see it going if they fought 10 times, 5-5, just, you know. And, you know, part of me wants to root for Tony because he, you know, fights with Eddie Bravo, fights over at 10th Planet, has a real funky style that I love to see, gets a ton of finishes. But on the other side, even though you might argue Khabib's game and style is almost Askren-esque, and it's a little boring, and it's very suffocating, the guy can talk a lot of shit. His shit-talking game is underrated, and I would love to see the media war that would be Conor versus Khabib. I think most Conor fans are probably rooting for Ferguson. I think stylistically, Khabib would offer Conor a lot of issues, Conor being a striker. If Khabib was able to get through that range and tie up with Conor, it might be a long night for Irish people watching. But yeah, I don't know. This is maybe the most pumped I've been for a non-title fight in years. I'm very much looking forward to it.
I have to agree with you there. I really can't recall the last time I was this jacked up for a non-title fight. I mean, the runs that both of these guys are on, I mean, it's been quite impressive. I must say, I don't want to seem like a hater, because I feel like I have thrown this out many times before, but Nurmagomedov did lose to Glazed T-Valve. It was not scored that way by the judges, but no, if anybody goes back and watches that fight, tell me who won that fight. That was certainly Glazed T-Valve. Be that as it may, Nurmagomedov, I don't want to take anything away from him. He's a fantastic fighter. He has, aside from that fight, pounded the absolute dog shit out of just about everybody he's fought. And he's looked pretty dang good doing so.
man, and this is such a, tough fight to call, because Tony Ferguson has just not even evolved his game, but just created this game. You know, he doesn't even fight like anybody else really in the UFC these days. He's got a very unique and very effective style. He's speaking of beating the absolute dog piss out of everybody that's put in front of you. That is essentially the same thing that Tony Ferguson has been doing. It's just fun watching them go about it in their own unique ways. As far as whose style is going to pan out the best, it's so tough. I mean, Nurmagomedov, really, his strength is on the ground. It's the ground and pound. It's grinding you down. If he gets a hold of any part of your body, he can wrestle you down. And that's been the case with just about the majority of fighters, save for Gleison Tibau. And I guess that's why I bring it up at the beginning. Not to be a hater, but just to point out, you know, he has been countered effectively and has been counterstruck effectively. There has been instances where it has been done, and we've seen it in the octagon. I don't know how the judges didn't see it, but it's just whether or not Tony Ferguson can stay off of his back. He's developed quite a good ground game, and it's very you know, he'll hit you with different attacks everywhere. But with Khabib and the smothering style that he has, whether or not he'll be able to get to those attacks is a whole different story. So it would certainly, I feel it, be in his best interest to try and keep it standing and work that strike, work that range. He should have a good height and reach in this one. And you know what? I think he's going to get the knockout victory. And I think he's going to be the victor in this one. I'd say probably first round, actually.
Taking the first round finish there. That brings us to the main event. Tyron Woodley, who I don't know if you can do you count a draw as a title defense? Is he still
no for his first title? At least me personally, you do a draw. You retain your title, but that's not the same as a defense. You're keeping it by default. You did not successfully defend.
So he won it against Lawler, retained it against Thompson, and is looking for his first title defense against the same man, Wonderboy Thompson, that he drew with back at UFC 205 in November. Hats off to them for having a relatively quick turnaround. I believe the first fight was November 12th, so that would be, what, December, January, February, March, a 3.5-month turnaround. Which for, you know, top athletes like Woodley and Wonderboy to not only rehab from the beating that they gave each other for a half an hour back at UFC 205 at Madison Square Garden, not only to rehab from that beating, but then to have a training camp and get ready to do it all over again in a 3.5-month time span. Hats off to both Woodley and Thompson for being pros, which they both definitely are. And man, I cannot wait for this damn fight. The first time we all thought that Wonderboy was going to pick apart Woodley, it was a rare title fight where the challenger was actually the favorite. And Woodley impressed the shit out of everyone. Not we all, but a lot of people thought that similarly to what Rory McDonald did to Woodley back at UFC 174, Thompson would just outrange him and jab him and kick him and keep him at bay and win the fight. Not so. Woodley rocked Thompson on multiple occasions, and it really was back and forth. And I saw that night on Twitter, I saw a lot of people picking Woodley, a lot of people picking Thompson, a lot of people saying it should have been a draw. I think I said it should have been a draw, and it got the majority draw nod. So, we get the rematch. Once again, Thompson is a favorite. although not as big as last time. He's minus 165 to Woodley's plus 145. I think I'm. Oh man, this is really tough. I think it's a little bit more even than Vegas might let on. But I think this time around, I'm going to take Woodley. You know, this is a fight where I think stylistically, it's no different than the breakdown we did for their first fight. But I think both fighters, especially Woodley, looked very, very good as far as game planning for his fighters' strengths and weaknesses. And I think it'll be more of the same. I mean, I am expecting another very close fight, only this time I really hope it isn't a draw. I hope one of the two guys can convincingly take three rounds, because the first time around it was, I think both guys easily took two, and one was a toss-up, and luckily two of the three judges gave that one a 10-10. But I'm actually misthinking that fight, and Woodley had a 10-8, which is why it was a draw. But it was a fun the first time around. I'm expecting nothing short of another barn burner this time.
Yeah, you know what? This is one of the toughest fights I could ever predict. I mean, after the way the first fight went down, I thought Wonderboy was going to get the job done in that fight. And it certainly looked like it was going that way for the majority of the fight. But man, then I want to say it was like going into the fourth round, old Wonder Boy's pops said some of the effect in between rounds of, oh, you know, don't get something to the effect of, you know, don't get lackadaisical or something out there. Don't let him catch you, blah, blah, blah. Sure enough, that's what happened. Old Wonder Boy got caught by Woodley. And got hurt incredibly bad, almost got stopped, somehow managed to come back and continue to fight well in that fight, surprisingly. But, he certainly got hurt very bad. But he did appear to, at times, have Woodley figured out, have the range figured out. He was winning the fight, and... man, it was a close one, though. This is one I could see. I mean, it's either going one of two ways, I feel. Either Wonderboy has made the adjustments, he won't get caught, and he'll play it smart, and he will either get the decision or the stoppage, or Woodley will go for broke at some point and just get the rushing knockout. And I think that's about the couple ways that it could play out. As far as what is going to happen, I mean, I have no clue. That is the most deserving draw of a fight I've ever seen. And it's hard for me to imagine it going any other way. Man, if I were a betting man, oof. My goodness, I don't know. I dare say put some money on Woodley. I think he might just rush out there and get the KO pretty quick. I don't know. Thompson, with his acumen, his credentials, you know, that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. Wonderboy Thompson shouldn't get knocked out by Tyron Woodley with his pedigree. Those adjustments should be made. Screw it. I'm saying Wonderboy takes it.
You're taking Wonderboy Thompson there. I will take Woodley. I actually do agree with you. Even if you're leaning Thompson, that first fight was so close to get either fighter. Plus 145 seems like a steal. I got nothing left unless you don't either. Like I said, we don't have any music, so... Pat, you have anything?
zip it up and zip it out. No, you know, always a pleasure, Jake. TMP 198, man. It was a goodie. Looking forward to that action this weekend. Always a pleasure breaking it down with you, brother.
Yeah, we'll try and maybe do a little interview once we get to UFC. I did it again. Once we get to TMP 200, which should be this month. I assume next week will be TMP 199, and then you know what I might do. I might, starting at TMP 201, start doing normal interviews and getting guys on, like Askren maybe. I mean, should I produce his podcast, so I could probably get him on fairly easily. But UFC 200, I would love to, even it might be a little bit of a clusterfuck if we do it all at once, but maybe throughout the call, just get check-ins from everyone, from Chris to Ramses, the word on the street, to Ross Finkelstein, the Jew. We'll hear from Yao, the truth. We'll hear from Officer Allen. We'll hear from Davey Boy. We'll hear from Ray Thompson if we can get him on. We might even check in with old Buffalo motherfucking Dave. All of the names, and honestly, every single one of those people I just named, I would call a friend, because it has been a hell of a time bringing up the MMA podcast and meeting people. Our old boy Mystery Meds, who does the intro and outro, we might get him on. I would say we'd get old King Ying on, but he seems to have disappeared into the ether. It has been nearly 5 years since we started the show back in June 2012, and what a ride it has been meeting people and doing shows. And I can't wait for the next five years doing it. It's been a fun ride, and on that upbeat note, we'll leave it until next week. Pat, as always, a pleasure. Until then, we go.